Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, October 24th. Local news roundup. Permian Casino Night. Oilfield Helping Hands has scheduled its inaugural Permian Casino Night on Thursday at Rolling Sevens Ranch, 11700 West County Road 122, Midland. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. Gaming runs from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., with the event concluding at midnight. A $250 ticket includes event entry, drinks, heavy hors d'oeuvres, one raffle ticket, and $1,000 in play money. There will be craps, double roulette, blackjack, slot machines, a raffle, and much more. There are also a variety of corporate sponsorship packages available, which include logo, branding, play money, and group entry ticket package options. To purchase a ticket to the event and contribute to helping oilfield families in financial need, visit Permian Casino Night Registration at tinyurl.com/JSBZWMJH. Cancer Sucks Fest. West Texas Gifts of Hope has scheduled Cancer Sucks Fest featuring the Ely Young Band October 30th at La Hacienda. Special guests will be Brian Milson and Treaty Oak Revival. The event benefits West Texas Gifts of Hope. General admission is $40 pre-sale or $50 at the door. Tickets are available at stubwire.com. To sponsor, call 432-614-9284 or email odessa.hopehouse@gmail.com. For more information, visit westtexasgiftsofhope.org. Single Moms Conference. Stonegate Odessa Church, 4240 Preston Smith Road, has scheduled a Single Moms Conference from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. November 6th. This is a one-day event of fun and encouragement designed specifically for women raising children alone. Child care is available for children ages 6 weeks to 12 years old. Pre-registration is required. Lunch will be provided for attending mothers and children. To pre-register or for more information, call 432-694-5100. OC Honors Luncheon. Odessa College will present the 14th OC Honors Luncheon on November 9th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Keynote speaker will be Jeffrey Canada. This year's honorees will be Lisa Wyman, Outstanding Individuals; Julie Marshall, Outstanding Educator; La Margarita, Outstanding Business; Medical Center Health System, Outstanding Nonprofit; Rohith Saravanan, M.D., Community Impact; and Wood Family, Virginia Chisholm Hall of Fame inductees. Sponsorship and tables are available. Online donations are also welcomed. Sponsorships from the luncheon will directly impact OC students through scholarships. These scholarships include the Student Success Scholarship, as well as scholarships for more specialized areas such as education, nursing, engineering, music, and more. To sponsor, purchase a table, to donate, or for more information, call 432-335-6648. Email foundation@odessa.edu or visit www.odessa.edu/OC Honors. ORMC employee shares her cancer survival story by Michael Bauer. When Odessa Regional Medical Center's materials manager, Charlotte Thurman, first learned about her breast cancer diagnosis last year, She refused to look at it from a negative perspective. "I'm not a negative person," Thurman said. "When I found out, I was just, what do I have to do? I never thought about dying or negative stuff. I just started doing what I had to do. I do well on my treatments." Thurman, who is now a breast cancer survivor, shared her story recently at Odessa Regional Medical Center. With October being Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Thurman used the opportunity to explain the importance of getting a mammogram, using her own experience as an example. Around this time last year, Thurman knew something wasn't right after going a couple years without a mammogram. "I discovered that there was a lump in my breast before taking a shower and then proceeded to call to get a breast exam," Thurman said. It was November of 2020 when she was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. "That's why, to me, it's important to get a breast exam, because I skipped about 2 years, and you know that everybody has that mentality of, it won't happen to me, but it does," Thurman said. Her cancer has since been in remission, but during her battle, Thurman said she never felt alone, as she had a support system of her friends and family. "I had my family, and I have a lot of friends," Thurman said. "I have friends that also had breast cancer that I could talk to." Breast cancer affects nearly 180,000 American women each year. With education and screenings, though, it can be detected early when it is most treatable. "That's why it's important to get it checked," Thurman said. "I think if I would have come here earlier, I would have been detected before it was a stage 3. Lead mammogram tech at ORMC, Kendra Leva, says there are a variety of reasons why some women put off getting a mammogram, including fear or just forgetting. "A lot of times I think patients let time pass," Leva said. "Although a year does seem like a long time, it flies by fast. They just forget. Sometimes they might be nervous, but it's important not to skip, because if you do, that's a year that you're missing out on getting that mammogram, that they could find something sooner. If you come in and don't skip that year and they find something, they're finding it and getting it treated faster." For those who are worried about a possible cancer diagnosis, Thurman says it's better to know than to not know. "I think there are more people that have breast cancer than we think," Thurman said. "Once I went to the cancer center, it's like you see so many people and friends, so it's important." Leva says the time for women to start doing yearly mammograms is usually at age 40, even though there are some exceptions. "We do usually start the yearly mammograms at the age of 40, unless you have a family history or some other reason to start sooner," Leva said. "Age 40 is what we call a baseline, meaning your first mammogram. Of course, the patients are very nervous. They've heard stories from family members and friends. We just bring them back here and explain the procedure and tell them that mammograms have improved over the years. We do have new paddles that are curved, so they form to the breast shape a lot better than just a straight paddle, so that makes it comfortable. So once we explain everything and start doing the mammogram, we talk to the patient throughout the exam, and once it's all over, the patient's like, wow, that wasn't bad at all. The process doesn't take long. Once we get the patient in here, go over the history, we do the exam, and they're out of the room in about 10 to 12 minutes," Leva said. "If something is found early, then the chances of treating it and keeping it from spreading are better. The faster you find the cancer, the better, because the longer you wait, the more it could change, the bigger the possibility that it could spread," Leva said. "If you catch it early, your possibility of certain treatments may lower. You may not have to do as many or as much, and it may not be as harsh as if you were to wait. They're always hoping not to find anything wrong after each mammogram." Having worked with Thurman for 15 years at ORMC now, Leva said it was very emotional among the staff last year when learning of her cancer. "It's very hard when a patient comes in and we do find something," Leva said. "Of course, that's something we don't want to find. Charlotte, being our hospital employee, it hit a little bit harder because it was someone that I had known for a long time at the hospital. I've known her for 15 years, so having her as a patient was hard, but she was very positive, and I would call and check on her every week. It was important that we took care of her. We gave her a good experience, and everything went well, and she was on her way to the cancer center. Just following up with her, it was good to hear her voice each week and check up on her. Thurman, who's been at ORMC for 35 years, was grateful for the support from her coworkers. "I know a lot of people," Thurman said. "My support group here was really great, from HR to my boss to everyone." It may be Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but Leva says it's important to remind people of the services offered at ORMC all the time, regardless if it's October or not. "We do promote that month as being very important," Leva said, "but it is important every month, so we're always open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. If you need an appointment, give us a call, and we'd be happy to help you out." Opinion from the Odessa American for Sunday. Restful conversation, easy to watch. Charles Cotton, Odessa, writes, "It was such a pleasure to watch an adult interview last night between Anderson Cooper and Robert Gates as part of the 60 Minutes program. I then watched the entire interview on 60 Minutes Overtime. There was no screaming and talking over one another and trying to elicit salacious comments. You have to respect someone who served 8 presidents from both parties and is rightly knowledgeable about the most important issue that is facing our nation, and that is our national security and where we stand in the world in competition with China and Russia and the threat of terrorism. He didn't waffle and was willing to take his share of the blame for mistakes that were made. How refreshing." When asked about comments he had made about President Trump and President Biden, he simply said he stands by his comments, which is refreshing in itself. When pushed on the hot topic, politically correct issues that are tearing apart our country, his only comment was he had never seen so much hatred, and if we are not careful, that hatred will be our downfall. Robert Gates is one of my heroes. I remember well in October of 2000, when I was the associate director of the John Ben Shepherd Public Leadership Institute, and we held one of our periodic leadership forums, this one on domestic terrorism. He was a panelist. At that time, over 800 domestic terror groups had been identified, and the discussion centered on how to stop their efforts, as well as those of foreign terrorists. I will never forget in his closing comments he said, "It is not a matter of if, but simply a matter of when, a major terrorist attack will occur on American soil, and how we respond will define the American character." 11 months later, 9/11 happened. The question I have for the America of today, what is our character and how does it reflect on us as a people? I think most Americans are tired of the political correctness, the social media bullying, and our elected officials being more interested in the party than the Americans they were elected to represent. A recent poll showed 29% identified as Democrat, 29% as Republican, but 41% as independent. The independents have the power to reshape this country, to once again make it the great melting pot and the shining example of what is possible to the world. That is my prayer. Let's drop the hyphens in America. Sandy Milner, Odessa, writes, "I wish that all the people who live in America, at least all the legal residents, would start being Americans instead of hyphenated Americans. What I mean is blacks who call themselves Afro-Americans did not come from Africa. Their parents did not, and in most cases their grandparents did not. Probably 90% of them were born in the U.S. Most of the legal Mexicans were born here. Likewise, most Chinese Americans, Japanese Americans, German Americans, and most other whatever Americans. According to government figures, 85% of all people, legal that is, living in America today were born in America. My ancestors were from England, Germany, and one great-great-grandmother was full-blood American Indian, but I don't call myself Anglo-American or German-American or Indian-American. Also, one of my distant relatives was black, but I don't call myself an African-American. I believe that being a hyphenated American is one of the worst things someone can be. If we decided to just be Americans, all the race hustlers would not be able to cause so much divisiveness among us. But, of course, that is their master plan. If they can divide us, then they can impose socialism or whatever on us. Because each race would only be looking out for itself instead of standing together as Americans. I only hope that we are not so stupid as to fall for their tactics. If all the people would just decide to be Americans, we could probably all get along a lot better. Residents should have been notified of blast, Douglas Moss, Odessa, writes. I live in Lawndale, just north of the open area between Schleymeyer Field and 86th Street. Today, the 22nd of October, just after 2 p.m., a serious shockwave passed through our home foundation, closely followed by the noise of an explosion. I went outside, walked south through the 86th Street intersection, when I noticed a large cloud of dust to the west, being carried north by a gentle breeze. I continued to the south alley, paralleling 86th Street, then headed west to determine the origin site of the blast. When I got to the now-dismantled corral, I moved south into the large area, once again under active improvement. I learned from one of those men they had blasted with dynamite. I explained it would have been a good idea to have the local populace informed via radio and TV before they blasted. He told me they had notified the sheriff's office and county commissioners of the blasting beforehand. On my way back home, my county commissioner Mike Gardner drove up to my neighbor and I. I asked him why the local populace wasn't informed ahead of time of the blasting. He responded that he had just learned of it 30 minutes prior. We discussed the severity of the shock and what that may mean as far as water line leaks, sewer line leaks, damaged slab foundations, floor tiles knocked loose, etc. He said the city would have to fix those things. I expressed that the blasters, not city taxpayers, should pay those repairs. But hey, don't notify via radio TV. I'm sure the blasters didn't know they were going to blast.
Red puffy gums? Dear Dr. Roach, I know you are not a dentist, but I have a question connected to high blood pressure, which I've had for 20 years. I'm 75, in fairly good health, and have gingivitis. For high blood pressure, my doctor took me off amlodipine, 5 milligrams, and prescribed a different calcium channel blocker, nifedipine. After 4 months, my gums became very puffy and were extremely red in some areas. A dental specialist diagnosed the gum problem as being caused by the nifedipine. I was advised to go off it ASAP. I changed doctors, and I am now on 3 medications for high blood pressure. One is amlodipine, along with metoprolol and valsartan. Will amlodipine eventually cause the same problem? Also, I take the highest possible dose of valsartan. Is this hard on the kidneys? Answer. I am by no means a dentist, but I do have some expertise on medical treatment of high blood pressure. Nifedipine is a major cause of drug-induced growth of the gums. Amlodipine and nifedipine both work the same way and are chemically related, but amlodipine rarely causes drug-induced gingival enlargement. The two other medicines you take, metoprolol, a beta blocker, and valsartan, an angiotensin receptor blocker, have never been associated with gums growth. Some people really do need 3 blood pressure medicines, so I wouldn't recommend discontinuing the medicine unless your doctor tells you to. Valsartan is an effective protector of kidney function in most people. Paradoxically, starting an angiotensin receptor blocker, whose generic names all end in sartan, or its cousin, an angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitor, whose generic names all end in pril, may cause the blood creatinine level to rise a bit. In fact, they are highly protective against damage from some kinds of kidney disease, especially those that cause excess protein in the urine. People with kidney damage due to blockages of the arteries to the kidneys on both sides should not take an ARB or ACE inhibitor. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Suffering woman tires of sister's negativity. Dear Abby, for Friday, October 29th. Dear Abby, I have ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, am wheelchair or bedbound, and am unable to do anything for myself, much less around the house. My husband works, and aides come in 4 days a week for several hours to provide me with personal care. I have to ask my only sister to help once a month. She's older than I am. When I do, she always puts conditions on the time or complains about the traffic. She lives an hour away. I finally told her I'm tired of hearing it and I want her to want to help me. Apparently, she was offended, so she's giving me the silent treatment. She isn't lazy, but maybe self-centered and lacking in empathy. I have four older brothers, but only one who lives close, an hour away. When I ask his wife for help, she never hesitates and comes bearing casseroles. The only difference between us three women is that my sister never had children and never experienced the challenges and sacrifices that come with parenting. I'm grateful for any help and always express thanks. Should I be grateful for whatever help she gives me, or take her silence as unwillingness to help and move on? In Need in Pennsylvania. Dear In Need, of course you should be grateful for whatever help your sister gives. It's unfortunate that she doesn't recognize the effect her constant complaints have on you. You are ill, and she's a martyr. Considering the challenges you face every day, it's a shame she doesn't have it in her to be more sensitive, but she doesn't. If her complaints add additional stress to your situation, you should definitely move on, if it's feasible. From your description, your sister-in-law is an angel on earth. Dear Abby, I have recently unearthed some of my old journals. In them, I wrote honestly about my life, my kids, husband, pets, etc. They were a way to vent, as well as to describe what my days were like as I kept the home, gardened, worked full-time, cared for the kids, etc. A few of the entries concern my spouse, who I'm still married to, and they are not flattering. They describe his refusal to help with the chores, his secretive drinking, and almost bankrupting us more than once. There are also stories about my children, who are now in their 40s, as children. I would have loved to know more about my mother's life, and that may be the case with my children. I'm unsure whether to leave them my journals upon my death. The journals might explain a lot of things, why we were always broke, never went on vacations, or couldn't afford the same things their friends had. But I hesitate to make their dad look bad. Should I destroy them or pass them on? Burn books or not? Dear Burn, your journals are family history. They are also a tribute to the survival of what at some points may have been a tumultuous marriage. I am assuming that your husband is sober now, and the two of you are financially stable. Pass them on to your children and allow them to form their own judgments.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.